I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Rugby League Digest. I'm Michael Adams, and I'm here with a very good friend of the show, one of our earliest friends, one of our best friends. It's Dave Hunter. How are you going, Dave?
I'm good, Michael. That's a great intro. Thank you very much for calling me a friend on many occasions. And it's a massive honour to be on your podcast.
You flatter us, and I mean that in every sense of the word. You run our fan page on Facebook, which is really nice thing of you to do, so that anyone who's not on top of that, I always forget the name. It's RLD Super League War Discussion Forum. Is that the...
It's probably... I changed it. I think it's something like that. Look, I can find out for you very quickly. Yeah. It's called RLD Super League War Discussion. There you go.
Yep, perfect. So anyone on Facebook who's not on top of that, please join. There's always some good debate, and you put up some great stats and various polls and surveys and all the rest of it, so get on board if you're not already. You have since spread your wings and started your own podcast, the Hyper Space Thetic RL podcast. So I don't want to take credit for your work, but I do feel a sense of pride. Like, if coaches have coaching trees, I consider you part of our podcasting tree.
Yep.
But you're doing some great work with the Hyperthetic RL, Dave. And I think talking about that show probably gives us a bit of an insight into your particular strand of rugby league nerddom. So do you want to speak a bit about what the Hyperthetic RL podcast is all about?
Yeah, definitely. So as you said, it's a good insight into my my crazy world, the thing that goes on inside my head. So I mean, as a Parramatta supporter, you're pretty much going to find a lot of us who like to talk about what ifs, because there's a lot of what ifs for Parramatta. And you know, I was sitting there one day, I was listening to your podcast, a few of the other ones I listened to, and I thought, there's these great history podcasts, but what about, you know, the alternate histories? What about we muck around with history and we say, look, let's change one event and see how that affects everything going down the line. And that's the basic premise of it, is that what we do each week is, or each episode, we take an event, sometimes a very small event, and then we kind of just extrapolate it out to see, you know, what could have happened if that's what occurred. It's all just, well, pretty much most of the episodes, it's been just me sitting in a room, just chatting to myself and, just trying to make it as insane as possible. I get a lot of positive feedback on the really weird ones. So that's obviously what people enjoy. And I just really like to do them. But, you know, sometimes I just did one recently that just came out that was Parramatta in 2009. Would have told Larry passes to Jared Hayne and we win that grand final. And it might have been the late night, but by the time I got to the end, I was a little bit like, I was actually starting to tear up, because I thought, and it wasn't a happy tear. It was a disappointment, because it was like, I did that one. And that was one of the ones I'd earmarked right at the start. I said, I want to do this one because I just want to get that feeling of, yes, we win. But then it was this disappointment of, hey, that didn't actually happen. And I'm like, oh, you know, one of the things.
Well, you've nicely brought us to the point where we are at with this episode. This is one of our case studies, which we're doing on your beloved Parramatta Eels. Just last thing on the Hyperthetic RL, you're really going from strength to strength. And anytime you trip up in the sheer convolution of it all, the more deranged it gets, the better. So it's a really fun listen. I urge anyone who isn't listening to get on top of that. Your new, you know, mini series of that show actually has a lot of relevance to what we're doing with our Super League war with your Irrational Merger series.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to one of them last night, so I've recorded 10 so far, and one of the fellas that I was talking to last night, it wasn't on the podcast, it was afterwards, and we were discussing, and I sort of said, look, the reason why I'm doing this series is because obviously, you know, you had the guys from Chasing Kangaroos on, you had Big T and Carbs, and you guys were talking, and then you mentioned my podcast, and you said, hey, we've got a good one for you about Super League, and then you sort of sent me a message and said, oh, I've got, you know, heaps more, and I went, well, I've got like 30 or 40 different things. So I thought, it's too big of a topic, and I sort of said to this fella last night, when I'm going to do a big topic, I'm going to need to break it down into smaller little bite-sized pieces, because I don't want a six-hour podcast. No one's going to listen to it. So the idea of this one is to identify each of the teams and just go through something, you know, just sort of see where we could go with mergers. So, you know, and I think the idea in the future would be other Super League topics or other bigger topics that I just do a little mini series, because I think it works better that way.
Mm. It's funny because the origins of our Super League series were, as you know, in our previous incarnation of the show, we were doing, you know, little history segments. But I came up against all these subjects I wanted to do that I couldn't do because it would require doing Super League. So I eventually said, well, we're just going to have to do Super League. And, you know, I was thinking it was going to be this 8-part series. And now we're, you know, 35 episodes in and we haven't cleared 1995 yet. So I understand full well how easy it is to go down a rugby league history rabbit hole. So I think we're kindred spirits in that respect.
To an extent, but then I know from what you talk about and what we've talked about before is the amount of meticulous detail that you go to. You know, I don't think I'd ever go to that much detail with research. You put so much effort in, and I just want to, like, on behalf of all the listeners out there, I just want to really thank you for how much you're doing, like how much research you've done. And you know, we've been crying out for this in-depth study into the Super League war and this, you know, for so long, and it's really great that you're doing it. And, you know, like I said to some of the other guys, I said to a guy we know in common, you know, did you know that your mate is like a podcast celebrity? Like, he's in NRL Twitter, he's like one of the gods. So, you know, like, and his thing was like, you know, Michael always puts a lot of research in, and I said, yeah, we know. Like, we know how much research Michael puts in.
Oh, I appreciate that, mate. So let's move on to the topic at hand, Parramatta. So where does it all start for you in terms of Parramatta?
So it starts for me as a child. I was a fan because it was my family team. What I sort of ask other people about is, why did you become a fan of your team? My story is that, you know, my grandfather and his brothers all played lower grades at Parramatta. But they were all from Newtown and, you know, in the city and stuff like that. So they all travelled out to Parramatta to play. Obviously, my dad became a fan because his dad played for them and that was the family team. And then I became a fan because of that. On many occasions as a younger child, I tried to be fans of other teams, and my dad just said, well, you can live outside. So, you know, I didn't really have much choice. And, you know, I kind of came up in the right era. So, you know, as a 6-year-old, we won the premiership, which is pretty good. You know, I don't really remember it, but I know that, you know, I know that we were a successful team at the time, so it made me feel really good about it, you know, and we'd obviously, that was our big run and it was the end of everything, but I didn't know about it at the time, but, you know, that's kind of where we started, you know, like a family team. I've tried to look into it before. My dad says, oh, look, you know, one of my uncles got really close to first grade, like, you know, on a reserve list or, you know, pretty close to it. But yeah, they never really cracked it. And I mean, my grandfather, he's passed away now, but he was a little nippy winger in third grade of the Parramatta system. And, you know, just sort of, it's that family connection, you know what I mean? So it's like, you kind of identify with being the Parramatta fan because it's your whole family sort of thing. So, you know, that's really where it starts. It's a hard team to follow. It's a hard club to follow because there's so much, you know, so much heartbreak in it. I know every other team's got that, but it just feels like you get bred as a Parramatta fan, you get bred for disappointment, and you're ready for it. It's kind of, it makes you ready for the disappointments in life because you know you're never going to get to the top. So I know it seems a little pessimistic, but you know, if you talk to a Parramatta Eels fan, there's this strange optimism, pessimism that sort of comes with it. You know, you can never really be happy. You're never really sure you're going to win, and then you just don't win. So
it's really funny because, you know, we're about the same age. So I grew up not as a Parramatta fan, but with the knowledge of them being a really good team, a really strong team. Even though I was too young for the glory days, they still had that legacy. And it's only as you get older and the years go by and, you know, now we're looking at them, you know, 34 years on with the longest active premiership drought. It's only now where you look back and you see that as that era as kind of an aberration, not really the way they've been since 1947, which is much more likely to be disappointment.
Well, that's sort of what when we were setting up for this, I wanted to sort of talk about because, you know, like right from foundation of Parramatta, you know, back in late 46 and when they came in 47, they were never a successful team. Like it was, you know, they finished last in their first season, like a lot of teams do that, but, you know, finished last. They had sort of close to last or, you know, not great season. I think 49 was okay. They were like one win out of the top four, but as aberration again, you know, and they got to like between 54 and 61, they came last 7 of 8 times. So, you know, like it's not a really great sort of history, but the strange thing about Parramatta is that you've got such a great junior base, but every time they have any type of success, it seems to be from bringing in from other clubs. So, you know, like I said, you know, from 54 to 61, very, very poor. And then they bring in Ken Carney from St George and they finish fourth, second and third. So, you know, like, I mean, obviously Ken moved on before that last one, but, you know, we brought in a lot of players from St George from the, you know, from that era. And, you know, they got pretty close. They got within one game of a grand final in there. So, you know, it's not terrible, but then, as soon as that sort of went away, that era went away, they went back to their old ways, you know, coming last, second last, you know, that sort of thing. And then only sort of once they brought in Norm Provan to coach them in the mid-70s, did they then start to, they had that sort of run in the 70s that they had. So what you don't kind of realise about Parramatta is that, like, we always talk about the 80s, but the mid to late 70s was actually a really good time for them as well. So, you know, they made two grand finals in a row in 76 and 77. You know, they were there and thereabouts around 78, 79 and 80, and then obviously get the title in 81. So I kind of see it as the kind of evolution of that team because, you know, early in the 70s you had guys like Ray Price and Mick Cronin, but you didn't really have just that last little bit on top. So it took, you know, them going down to the Riverina and picking up guys like Peter Sterling, and it took them sort of bringing in just a little bit more class to sort of become that dominant team they became in the 80s. But the backbone was there in the 70s. So it's sort of interesting, their timeline. And if you kind of break it down, you sort of go, well, you know, mid-60s they had an okay run but didn't really do anything. The 70s, the 80s was their next run. And then from then on, you know, I mean, you could argue the late 90s was a good run as well. But, you know, it's pretty much confined to three kind of good areas in a, you know, a long history. You're talking, you know, what is that, 60-something years history? I can't remember. I can't. Maths ain't that great, but, you know.
Well, it's funny that there's some kind of parallels for me as a Dragons fan. Obviously, we have the historic era, and you mentioned Carney and Provan. It's interesting that Ian Walsh, our other premiership-winning captain coach in that 11-in-a-row, also coached Parramatta. So a weird little quirk of fate then. But, I mean, you take out those 11 premierships, and it's quite similar for St George as well, really.
Well, can we take that out? Because I can hypothetically rule that away from you.
Please don't. That's all we've got.
I've done it once. I've done it to you guys once, but I just split it in the middle.
You seem to love taking premierships away from the Dragons, I've noticed.
Oh, look, it's nothing personal. Well, it is something personal because I have... It's not personal to you, but something personal to, you know, where I grew up. I had a Dragons fan next door and he was over-the-top Dragons fan and just, yeah. Anyway. So it's probably a little bit of personal, but, you know, like I do have allegiances to certain teams. As you can tell, I've got a bit of a soft spot for the Tigers. You know, it was my other grandfather's favourite team, although he didn't really like rugby league. He just had to pick a team. Big Gary Jack fan. And, you know, I kind of don't mind Norths and Cronulla's okay and, you know. But look, I don't hate St George. It's not like it's going out there to get you guys or anything. But it just kind of, when you have 11 in a row, you like to just muck around with it. But I will say, I did give you an extra one and gave you 12 in a row once, so...
All right, we'll call it even. But so we've talked about the near misses of Parramatta, or their natural growth as a club. We should briefly talk about that premiership era, and I kind of think that it maybe in some ways set them up for the failure of the next decade, which I can elaborate on. But what are your thoughts about that team, that era? Like, you know, where they rank historically, any players that stand out to you?
Well, I mean, you know, like, I'll put it this way. My dad's favourite player is Ray Price. I almost became Ray Price Jr. So, you know, like, that's the family sort of, you know, we really love him. I'm a massive fan of Peter Sterling. You know, I used to play junior football, and I used to be like a bit of like a 5'8", and used to sort of a bit of a swerve, and people would go, "You're just like Brett Kenny." I'm like, "Oh, you know, this is..." So you realise I grew up in Parramatta area. So, you know, even though my family was all from, you know, inner west and or sort of inner city, you know, Newtown, that kind of area, you know, my parents moved to Parramatta district when I was, like, before I was born, just a year or two before. And so I grew up with all this Parramatta. So when you talk about these players, like... I'll talk about the 80s era guys because that's who I remember. So I remember Cronin and Price and Sterling, Kenny. You know, I'll even throw an Atkins in there. I'm happy to talk about him. Ella, you know, Growth. You know, there's so many. I can name the whole 13, and they're all legends to me. Like, good old Peter Wynn, you know, with his Parramatta shop down there, the Peter Wynn score. And, you know, there's so many great players. And then when I was sort of growing up, and when my dad would talk about it, he'd talk about, you know, Ray Higgs, and he'd talk about, you know, maybe not so much Dennis Fitzgerald, but, you know, some guys in that kind of era. And, you know, I'd always hear him going on about, you know, Colk and even guys like, you know, Hambley and Ron Lynch and that sort of stuff, because that's where he kind of knew. And, you know, like, they were all kind of legends. And, of course, I'm going to be sacked from the Parramatta Union if I don't mention Ken Thornett, so I've got to mention NFL. But, you know, like, that's the kind of era. But for me, in the 80s, it was all about Sterling. Like, Peter Sterling was Parramatta for me. Like, he was my player. I used to, this is going to be embarrassing, I'm going to tell thousands of people this, but that's fine. I used to go out in the backyard when I was about 4 or 5 years old with football, kick it around and call myself David Sterling. So, you know, like that he was the guy. I had the poster of him. I had, you know, he was the, never met him, and I think I'd be too afraid to meet him because I think I might get a little bit too excited. But, you know, like it's one of those things where he was my childhood idol. Like that was, I loved all the rest of them, but he was the guy.
One thing Andy and I do in our normal podcast is to pick out highly decorated players or coaches that have reached the point of being underrated. And I think Sterling is by far the head of that list. If you look at what he achieved, how, you know, how much he won as a, you know, leading that team in Parramatta, but also the individual awards, how highly he was rated for so much of the 80s. Like, we're talking about a guy who should be knocking on the door as an immortal, and you so rarely hear him talked about in that context.
Yeah, I sometimes think that it's his own fault in a way because he doesn't talk himself up. You know, you listen to him in commentary and you know, like if anyone mentions him, he'll kind of talk it down. It's like, oh, yeah, no, yeah, whatever. And they don't really talk about him anymore. So, you know, I remember when Andrew Johns was coming through and they were sort of saying, oh, look, he's one of the greatest halfbacks since Sterlo. And then Sterlo would be like, oh, well, I'm nothing compared to Andrew Johns, you know, like, which is fair enough. He can have that opinion, but it just seems to be, you know, like he doesn't get talked up, and I'm just not sure why. I'm not sure if it's if it's because it's a Parramatta thing. I'm not sure, or whether it's just because he's in commentary, so it's a bit, it sort of seemed a bit wrong to talk him up. But yeah, I mean, he was everything to that Parramatta team, and I think we're going to get to that in a sec about their downfall, because you for me the downfall is when he gets taken out in that game against West, and probably the few years earlier when he doesn't really play. You know, like the end of Sterling's career is pretty much the end of Parramatta in that era.
Well, where I come at it from is I was looking at that 86 team yesterday preparing for this, and you're already seeing a bit of a downturn. Like, that team is nowhere near as stacked as the, you know, the team that won the three in the row earlier in the 80s. Then you had at the end of that year Cronin and Price retiring. And then in the years beyond 86, that team just deteriorates by the year to the point that by like 90, 91, like there's no one in that team besides Sterling and Kenny who were both on their way out.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And there's no succession plan. That's, I think the they really didn't work. You got to, I suppose you got to realize too that, you know, in the early 80s you had Jack Gibson, you know, and he would have been taking care of, you know, who brings in and things like that. And then, I mean, the 86 coach is John Boney. You know, he doesn't last around Parramatta too much longer. And then we kind of do a bit of an old boys club. You know, you get guys like Mick Cronin coaching. You know, you've got that sort of, that different, you don't have the winners, if you know what I mean. Like, it's sort of hard to, I'm not going to put it in a bad way, but, you know, like the coaching, I mean, you get Ron Hilditch coaching. Not that he was a terrible coach or anything. It's just that, you know, they weren't recruiting right. You know, they weren't sort of bringing in the players. They was going, oh, well, we'll just continue to win so we don't have to worry about it. And it just sort of, you know what I mean? Like when you see a real long dynasty, it's not, I mean, we talk about the St. George one. The guys that are in the first grand final and the guys that are in the last grand final are not the same guys. There's almost, but the guys in the first one and the last one are littered with, you know, internationals and immortals and all kinds of things. So it's not like they just went, here's a great team, we're going to run them to the end and then we'll figure it out later, which is what Parramatta seemed to do. They were renewing themselves all the way through. So I think you're right. Like, it's the change. And I think they always thought, well, if we keep Kenny and Sterling, we're going to be fine. We'll be all right. Don't worry about it. But, I mean, you know, you talk about 91. Even though he had Sterling, he wasn't playing very often. You know what I mean? Like, he was getting injured quite a lot. So, you know, I remembered if we had him, we may win a game, but if we didn't have him, we had no chance. So, you know.
So where do you put the blame? Like, is it the administration? Like, is it the junior system? Because, I mean, even in the glory days, there's not that many Parramatta juniors that make up, you know, those all-time players. Like,
yeah, I think the thing with the junior system, so when you talk about junior systems nowadays, it's sort of gets me a little bit irritated with some people about the whole, oh, he's a something junior. A lot of the times nowadays, they go out to the country and they bring a kid in his teenage years, and he's counted as a junior.
Mm.
And I think maybe they just stopped doing it. I'm not sure what they did because, you know, like there is some, I kind of look at, you know, around 91, 92, there's some reasonable players, but there's no one that really sets the world on fire through that sort of, say, 92 season. You know, like, you got guy. I mean, my sister used to love Robert much more because she thought she loved his hair. You know, that's pretty much the best thing you can say about him. But, you know, you brought through some, there's some good players there. You know, you got Mark Horro is an international, he's a New Zealander. So, you know, there is something there, but I'm just not sure. I just don't think they went actively out to try and bring them through. And, you know, there's the junior system in Parramatta is pretty good, like the local boy juniors. But I think when you actually look at where most of the really good juniors come from, they're not specifically, you know, the kids who grew up in the Parramatta district. They're from all over the country, and, you know, like that's, I think that maybe some of that could have happened. I'm not a big expert in that time period, so I'm not entirely sure whether maybe what they did is they just stopped looking out, like, outside their sphere. I'm not sure what happens with the recruitment manager, but I think that's where most of the blame is. It's the administration and the recruitment that they just didn't identify the talent right. And you can tell, you know, from what came through that there wasn't the same amount of talent coming through. So, yeah, look, it's not like you can only pick people from your own who grew up in your own district. They needed to get out there and to try and find, you know, alternate streams. Like we talk about, you know, the Raiders. You know, not many of those guys in the late 90s, or late 80s, early 90s are from Canberra itself. They're from all over the place. You know, you've got New Zealanders, you've got Queenslanders. You know, that's what they needed to do. But they obviously didn't bring those players through. They weren't actively looking at Queensland players. They were just bringing in the also rounds that they could find.
Which, and however you want to square the blame, it leads to an 11-year semi-final drought from that last premiership. When you think of a Super League context, the absolute worst time to be, you know, reaching your nadir as an on-field force. But it seems that off-field, like, they were travelling okay. Like, I think it's a strong leagues club. And up to that point, it seems like a fairly stable administration. I think it's... it's in the mid-90s where you start seeing the yearly rebel ticket launched against Fitzgerald. But
we all like Fitzgerald in the early 90s, but like it just going on the players as well. I remember many times, you know, being sort of around the early 90s, you'd sort of listen on the radio and you'd gone to a Parramatta game, we'd lost usually. And I'd be sitting there and we usually used to walk up to a certain section and we'd wait for my mum to come pick us up. And Dad would have the radio and, you know, you'd turn the radio on and they'd be talking about, oh, well, you know, for next year, here's all the players that, you know, teams have signed. And, you know, Parramatta would be like one person. And you're like, how are we ever going to get any better if we can't bring anyone in? And that's just, you know, that seemed to be what the case was. You know, we'd signed one person and I didn't know who that person was. Like it was, we weren't going out there to try and find the next talent. So, you know, but look, Fitzgerald, he's a problematic character for Parramatta fans. You know, we kind of liked him and then we didn't like him. And, you know, he runs a very good leagues club and we made a lot of money in the leagues club, but you feel like the leagues club became more important than the football club.
Yeah.
That's probably, you know, when you're running a football club and you're trying to win, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you get from poker machines because, you know, if you're not going to have a winning team, it's sort of useless, you know. What's the point of having a non-winning team in a really great league club?
Well, it's like Andy and I always say, like, just get out of football. Open a casino. Like, if that's where your passion lies, just get out of football.
But I think he probably would have. I think if he could have just run it as the league's club without the football, he probably would have. I don't know much about him personally, but you know, like it did seem like he didn't like the Parramatta, and he certainly didn't like the boys from the '80s. He definitely didn't like Ray Price. So you know, there may be a little of animosity there, and he probably just went, oh look, you know, who cares about the football team? I'm making a lot of money here, and this is where exactly what you're saying. Why don't they just get out of it and just run a leagues club?
Well, I think I don't know if it was the first. I'm gonna say it's the first. Attempted coup against him, which was led by Jack Gibson. And I think Terry Fernley was involved as well. This was in about 96. And Gibson actually said, he can have the leagues club. We just want him away from the football operations.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too, is that they were joined together. And I'm not sure when that sort of occurred, but that only fairly recently sort of got separated out again, because the football club was, you know, you could be a member of the leagues club. And it was like an automatic football club. And then, there's this weird thing in Parramatta where, you know, normally you become a member of the football club, but everyone was just leagues club members and they were just, you know, everything was kind of owned by the leagues club. So rather than the football club owns everything and they get a grant from the leagues club, it was more like the leagues club owns everything and they have control. So they can do whatever they want.
Mm.
It's just a weird dynamic. So, I mean, I'm fairly sure it's been fixed now from what I can figure out. But, you know, like that's not, usually the way you run it is your football club is your football club and they get money from the leagues club rather than it being run by the leagues club.
Yeah. But it was a strong leagues club, which I think is probably the ultimate saviour as of Parramatta as we, you know, get into the NRL era. But let's stay in 1995. Super League hits. Parramatta have an abysmal season. I think it was 3 games you won all year. A complete, like, squad of absolute no names. What I usually do, what I should have done at the start, was to get some perspective on where you were at Super League at that point.
Yeah. Look, I'm a Parramatta fan, and wherever they went, I would have gone with them.
Yeah.
In saying that, because, you know, I was like, you know, teenager, I'd kind of fallen out of love with it a little bit, you know. I still went to games and everything, but I wasn't that involved, like not like I am now. And, you know, even in that point or and sort of when we went further on, I kind of, not that I turned away from the game, but I wasn't really worried about going. You know, I wasn't going with my dad anymore. I think he'd kind of fallen out of love with it a little bit as well. And, you know, like I might go to maybe 2 games a year with some friends or something. That was where I was at sort of by 95. So I do remember going to the game that we played, the Sydney Tigers at Parramatta Stadium, which was interesting. Seeing a team called Sydney playing out of my home ground, you know, it was really weird. But, you know, I wasn't going that often. And, you know, being a teenager, you got better things to do, you know. And I was still playing football, so, you know, I was still involved, but maybe not turning up to the game as much. But, look, I think if if Parramatta had said, oh, look, you know, now we're going to Super League, I probably would have watched the Super League and not watched the ARL. But, you know, I didn't really, to be honest, 95, I wasn't really paying attention because we were pretty shit. So what was the point of watching if we're just going to lose every round? And, you know, and it was the, I think it was the case that I always thank the Gold Coast, you know, the Gold Coast Seagulls for being in existence because they saved us 2 more wooden spoons then. So,
yeah,
you know, we were terrible. We were like one of the worst teams. And like it sort of goes back to that whole Peter Sterling, Brett Kenny, you know, we were just holding on to that last little bit of what we could get out of them. And I think if you have a look at the kind of players that we were bringing through at the time, you know, we had Jason Bell till 92 and then he left. You know, we had David Penner until like 93 and then he left. And then, you know, we had Michael Buettner around the time and then he kind of left and came back as well. You know, Michael Buettner was still there around 95. But, you know, we had all these halves that we tried through. And obviously, you know, when Sterling finally retired, the heir apparent was a fellow called Stu Galbraith. And no disrespect to Stu, but he wasn't very good. And we tried very hard, but just wasn't the same player. And then, you know, like I remember, because, you know, I used to go to all three grades. Like that's how we used to go. We'd turn up for the under-20s or President's Cup, or what it was called at the time. We'd watch them. We'd watch the reserve grade. And then we'd watch these young players coming through. And we always had this, oh, maybe this guy will be the next Peter Sterling. So even back then, even the early 90s, we were still going, oh, this will be the next Peter Sterling. You know, and they just, none of them were ever quite there. You know, I was having a little bit of a look, a little bit of research as we went in. And just looking at some of these players and, you know, name popped out, you know, Martin Seale. I remember Martin Seale. I thought he was a fantastic player. I thought, oh, this guy's going to be one of, you know, he's going to be a great halfback. And yeah, he wasn't that good. So, you know, it's just, we were always hoping that we could just find that next kind of player that would just bring us back to glory again. And, you know, and by the time I got to 95 and we weren't doing too well, I sort of had, like I said, I'd sort of fallen about it, out of love with it a little bit. And like, so I hadn't gone that many times. And then obviously Super League happens. The 96 season wasn't that great either. And then, you know, by the time I got to 97, I mean, I watched some games. I watched the grand final in 97, but I wasn't that much like, oh, you know, I love this game so much. I'm going to have to, I turn up every week or something like that. It really kind of started from about 98, 99 onwards when I kind of got a bit older and I was like, well, I really want to get back to the football again. And, you know, I need to reconnect with this. And then that's when, you know, that's when I kind of really reconnected again. But, you know, I could have just stopped watching, you know, look at, and it's not because obviously I didn't lose my team. It's just that I felt like I'd lost them because they'd become so nothing that, you know,
yeah.
it's really hard to watch them each week. And I just sort of, you know, try telling a 16-year-old to watch a team that can win like 3 games in a season in a like 22-round season. It's, they're not going to want to watch. There's no point to it.
It's funny you say that you stopped paying attention to Parramatta in 95. You know who else stopped paying attention? Super League. Like their strategy in April Fool's Day to go after the top players meant that for them, Parramatta were an afterthought because there were no players that could move the needle in public perception. But as they found out later, it would have been very handy to have a team like Parramatta in their competition. And you would have think you could have like signed up that club, you know, wholesale if they'd have gone after them early in 95.
Probably. I mean, like you said, there's no one of any significance in that team. I mean, I just opened the 95 team up and I'm looking at these names and I know like 90% of them. I just remember them because I remember these names on team sheets. I remember watching them. But like if I name these names, I don't think anyone apart from Parramatta fans would have much idea who the hell they were. And yeah, like you said, no one would move the needle there. There's just no one there that anyone would really care about. But yeah, I'm not sure. Like at the time, Parramatta was really an afterthought. And I think I've mentioned it before, you know, it felt like, you know, Parramatta would just fall with whoever paid any attention to them. Like, no one really cared about us and we weren't really worthwhile even talking to. So, you know, if Super League had gotten up completely, we probably would have been, you know, put to second grade or whatever the hell they would have done to us. But I don't think we would have been surviving if that happened. And if we had, you know, if we'd sort of really pushed and said, oh, we really want to come and join Super League, I'm not sure if they really would have wanted us. You know, like, they obviously, you know, weren't with Penrith and Canterbury, and that's their kind of Western Sydney part. But, yeah, just not sure. Not sure what the thinking was. But I think they would have got Parramatta straight away if they wanted them. I just don't think they wanted them.
Mm. And so as it turns out, they do stay loyal to the ARL. And because of that, in 1996, basically get a whole new team of Super League refugees, highlighted by the Filthy Four. You also had...
Hold on. Wait. Oh,
sorry.
This is Parramatta. They're the Glorious Four. There's no filthiness about them. They're the Honourable, the Fantastic Four. It's probably a better name for them. Those Canterbury people can just suck it. Sorry. You know, like, okay. it's not like a player never left Parramatta and went somewhere else. You know, we don't call them the Filthy whatever who leaves us. But, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's what you're saying. There's some fantastic players that come in because of the whole Super League war issue. And that's where the start of the Renaissance happens, really.
Shout out to Nick Tedeschi, who I think uses that term at least half in jest. But in addition to the Glorious Four, as we'll call them for this episode only, you also had Gary Freeman coming from Penrith, Adam Ritson and Aaron Raper coming from Cronulla. I know you had a couple more signings. Nathan Barnes came from Newcastle, who obviously were an ARL club too. But however it broke out, round one, 1996, you had two players that were in the corresponding fixture from a year before, which I haven't gone into every season, but I think that would have to be near unprecedented to have that level of turnover in the space of a year.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, you know, when you look at that team list from the year before, there's not many guys that you would worry about keeping anyway. So, and then I suppose, I mean, I remember from when that happened, and we picked up all these guys. It was something like 9 guys on something $1 million. I can't remember what it was reported in the newspaper.
I think it was about $8 million from memory.
Yeah. And it was about 9 different guys they had. Because I remember there was a big spread that was put on one of the newspapers, probably a Super League affiliated newspaper, now I think about it, that basically had the title, "What's the Matter, Parramatta, When We Weren't Winning?" So it was like, you've tried to buy this, you've tried to buy the premiership, you know, you've tried to buy every single player, but look, you're not winning. And in a sense, I don't know, when we talked about the poor retention strategy and the poor recruitment strategy of Parramatta, it kind of feels like, I mean, I remember thinking of sort of later in the 90s that maybe we were just keeping the powder dry. Maybe we could see something was happening. I at this point, I still thought Fitzgerald was a legend and was like, you know, playing all kinds of mind games and, you know, that he knew what was going to happen. That he had some sort of inkling that Super League would happen and he'd be able to pick up some players, but I don't think that's the case. But I always thought, well, you know, we didn't spend a lot of money. We didn't go out there because there wasn't anyone that we could, you know, we weren't going to turn this around without some kind of massive investment. And then, well, are we, you know, we bring in these 9 or 10 or however many players we brought in, you know, of this significant quality. But then, like I said, we still didn't instantly become a success. Like, there was a lot of, you know, well, we should be winning, we should be dominating this competition because of the players we brought in. I never really bought into that because, I mean, fair enough, there's 4 really good quality players from a premiership winning team and there's some other quality players there, but it's not like we brought in half the Australian team or anything. There was still quite a lot of way to go to become the really competitive team that we had to become.
Plus, there are also quite a number of significant injuries to those, off-season buyers in 1996 as well. But I remember, like, that was probably the loudest I've ever heard the collective rugby league cries about trying to buy a comp. And there was actual glee from fans, from the press, that Parramatta didn't do well in 1996.
That's usually what happens. So when I talked about, you know, being a Parramatta fan and you've got the optimism and the pessimism all come together. The other thing that seems to happen, and it's happened this year as well, is that the minute that Parramatta gets a little bit of success or looks like they may have success, they get talked up and then they get slammed for it. And it's like, I'm not sure why that happens. I'm not sure if it's something about Parramatta, but it does seem to happen. Like, if we try and reach out of our kind of station life and try to become one of the power brokers of the game, then all of a sudden everyone wants to beat us down. And I'm not sure why that happens, but it just seems to happen to us. But yeah, look, they really did play it up, and it was, you know, the what's the matter Parramatta. I mean, I still hear them yell it out in the grandstands at Parramatta when we're not doing well. But, you know, it worked really well. It was a great little line, and I think that, you know, obviously because we weren't winning the competition, it's, you know, that's just the way they were gonna, that's the way they were gonna treat us.
But then going into 1997, the Super League year, is when the fortunes start to turn around. You had Brian Smith coming in as coach, who in himself was somewhat of a Super League refugee. He left St George because of the merger that was going to happen with Easts. He knew that he was going to be out of a job with Phil Gould coming in. Goes to Bradford. You think he would have always come back to Australia to have another go at coaching an ARL team at some point. So you land Brian Smith, who a complicated legacy, but I think is a very good coach. What are your thoughts of Brian Smith?
Yeah, look, I think he's an excellent coach. And look, I think you when you talk about it, you go from, and look, I'm going to apologise to Ron Hilditch, but he's not a very good coach. You go from Ron Hilditch in 96 to Brian Smith in 97, and the results are almost instant. So, you know, it like you said, you can bring in as much players as you want, but you need a quality. You need the quality coach as well. And Brian Smith is a quality coach. And look, I know he gets a lot of beat down. Oh, you know, never won a grand final, that sort of stuff. It's not his fault that players turn up on a day and they're not prepared. I mean, it's his responsibility to make sure that they are as prepared as they can be. But you know, I don't blame him for anything. Any of those competitions that we lost. I mean, we always love your competition, but I don't blame him for any of those ones that we were a chance of and we didn't win. You know, like regular season, Brian Smith is one of the best coaches of the last 20 years or 30 years, or whatever you say. You know, like he's turned teams around. I mean, he didn't just do it to us. He went on and he did it for the Roosters. He went on and he did it for Newcastle. He's done it for, you know, teams in England as well. You know, I'm probably missing someone there. I don't know, something else there. But
well, he certainly turned the Dragons around.
Dragons, there you go. I mean, I that was a bit that was a bit before that. But yeah, you know, like he's definitely able to get the most out of a team during a whole season, and then, you know, just has not been able to get over the line. And, you know, I just say that the Dragons team that ran into the Broncos twice, you know, run into the 92-93 Broncos and see what happens. Like, it's they weren't going to get beaten in either of those. And then, you know, like maybe 2001's partly his fault. As a Parramatta fan, I blame the nighttime grand final, and that sort of seems a bit strange. But I blame the fact that it was the first time it happened, and they just weren't, you know, the nerves that team had. You know, imagine stringing your nerves out for 15 hours.
Mm. Have you gone back and watched that game?
Yes. I'm not someone who won't watch things just because we lost. I've gone back and watched that one. I've watched the 99 prelim against Melbourne. I don't think I've watched some of the 98 prelim against Canterbury as well. I went back to the 1976 grand final because I wanted to see what that was all about, because, you know, it was always talked about as they should have won. They just, that last pass got dropped and, you know, that sort of stuff. So I watched 2001. I remember it from live, and I remember having, you know, my sister was a casual fan. She didn't really, you know, she became a Parramatta fan when they were winning, and some sort of sitting there, and she just kept saying to me, why are they not winning? David, why aren't they winning? They should be winning. I'm like, I don't know. They should be better than this. And she's like having a go at me, and it's like, it's not my fault. I'm cheering the best I can. It's one of those things where they just, yeah, you could see the nerves. We saw it before kickoff as they were running on, and I just had this sinking pin in my stomach when I saw them. And I think it was, you know, guys like, you know, I remember seeing PJ Marsh's face, and he looked like someone had just jumped, scared him or something. He looked petrified, and the rest of them looked like that, and they just weren't prepared. And I suppose you could say that's the coach's fault, but, you know, like they just weren't there for that game, and it's such a shame. You know, in saying that, Newcastle was a pretty damn hot side, and they weren't getting the press they should have been getting. So it's not like, you know, they came up against a team it was any sort of chumps. They were a good team, and, you know, like, you when you watch that game, that it was over. You know, it was obviously over at halftime, but once the nerves kind of once they kind of went, oh, this is over now, whatever, they just started playing football again. All of a sudden, they started scoring, and I thought, what the hell's happening here? Like, that's the most disappointing part of that game, is the fact that it ends up being 30-24. Yep. If it would have ended up being 30-4 or 30-6, I'd be like, okay, we just got real well beaten and, you know, whatever. But it just made you think, like, oh, well, if we could have just started better, we might have won that game. And
yeah,
you know, like that's the feeling. And then you move on to the next year, and then they don't repeat the same. The team falls apart again. So, you know, like it's one of those things.
I think it's a testament to how good, how dominant that team was that year, that a team like Newcastle, led by Andrew Johns, can fly so far under the radar going into that grand final.
Yeah, exactly. And look, this is the thing, is they dominated everyone. They were, at the end of that 2001 season, I think we're getting off topic, we're talking 2001 now, but that's fine. At the end of that 2001 season, you know, Brian Smith was resting players. He was leaving players off the field for the last 10 minutes in case we got a sin bin in the last 10 minutes. We were playing with 12. You know, we were toying with the competition, still winning. And we were putting up big scores against teams. And in a way, I think that's part of what the downfall was as well, is they weren't prepared. They weren't prepared to come up against someone who was actually going to match them. And, I mean, in their finals games, they weren't really matched. You know, like there was no one who really was even close to us. You know, we pretty much won in a canter in most of those games. And then all of a sudden, you know, you come up against someone who comes out, you know, you're not prepared for it, and they come out hard at you. And by the time you turn around, you're 24-0 down. You know, it's just one of those things. And, you know, there's points in that game that I've watched. You know, there's Andrew Ryan getting held up over the line. That's always painful because, you know, you kind of feel that if they got one before Newcastle got too far in front, maybe that changes that result. But, you know, it's really hard to know. And, I mean, I've experienced it personally. Like in 95, I played in a grand final and we were down 18-0 in the first 5 minutes or something. Ended up getting beat 24-10. But, you know, like we kind of right the ship and everything, but we were just as good as the team we were playing, if not probably better. But basically, you know, like they went through the same hole. They'd watched our tapes. Like this is 95 and we're like 15-year-old kids.
Yeah.
But they'd gone and watched the tapes and they had identified an error, like a problem with one of our props who didn't move laterally really well. And they targeted it 3 times in a row. And by the time we'd realized what had happened and adjusted it, you know, the game was gone. So
wow.
In that way, 2001's very similar. You know, Newcastle targeted something and found that I think they went on through the edge, didn't they? Didn't Kennedy keep going through on the edge or something? I think that might be what they did. I can't remember. But yeah, like obviously being down by, you know, I think they scored 3 pretty quick tries at the start of the game, and then, you know, I think it was over. By the time we'd sort of gotten your momentum back, it was the end of the game.
Yeah, we have gotten well off track. Very brave of you to be able to dissect that game like that. If you talk about some bad Dragons losses, I would shut it down after half a second.
No, but look, see, this is the difference between Dragons fans and Eels fans, is that we don't enjoy it, but it's so ingrained in us that we know. Like, I could go through a season that we talked about where Parramatta wasn't very good, and I can't remember exactly which season it was, but, I mean, at this time, it's sort of weird timing too, because, you know, in that sort of early 90s, and you know, we've talked about it before, not all the games were on TV, obviously. You used to listen on the radio. And I do remember listening to a game and we were playing the Balmain Tigers, and there was not many rounds to go, maybe 3 or 4 rounds to go. And one of the presenters had said, oh, look, if Parramatta wins this game and the remaining games, they're likely going to make the finals. You know, if results go their way, they can make the finals. And we were leading very late on, and I remember the radio calls through, and, you know, Bocca Roach puts his nose through the line and offloads to someone, and they score and they end up beating us. And then we went on a run and won all these other games to the end, and we missed out in the finals by not many points. And then I remember, and at the time, like, they did the replay on the news at night time, and I'll tell you, that pass was 2 metres forward. it still haunts me, as, like, you know, I was only probably like 11 or 12, that sort of time, I can't remember which year it was, but, you know, they weren't a very great side, but they still had Peter Sterling, they still had Brett Kenny, and they were, you know, if they could have just won 1 or 2 extra games that season, I mean, they would have got blown away in the finals, but they would have at least played the finals, and that would have made me feel much better about it. But, you know, I can recount whole bunches of seasons where, you know, just one result, we just needed to get that one win, and, you know, that's kind of a Parramatta fan logic, is that we were just one game away, and if we could have just done that, then we would have won, and then the glory would come, because we'd win one and we'd win all of them. You know, like if we win in 97, we win every grand final of 2001. That's the kind of logic in a Parramatta mind. But,
yeah,
you know, we also know that that's not, that wouldn't have happened.
You really have given further insight into why hypothetic RL is the way you've chosen to express your love of rugby league. It all makes sense now.
Perfect sense. I'm the person who just wants to change history so badly because it just didn't go our way.
So let's look at the end of 1996. The appeal decision comes down. Super League is going ahead in 1997. We're going to get to it in the next season of our series, but this causes some crisis talks among ARL clubs and a real sense that clubs could jump ship and go to Super League. And Parramatta were strongly considered to be one of those clubs. They were the last team to pledge their loyalty to the ARL. It might have even been on the Facebook discussion group, but I remember seeing a comment from a Parramatta fan saying, you know, oh, we saved the ARL, right? And it was just in question. I couldn't really think. I didn't really know what he meant by that. Parramatta saved the ARL. That's the only thing I could think he might have meant, that by staying loyal in the end, it, you know. But do you have any sense of that?
In a sense, look, I think at that point, and from that point on, this is where the problematic Dennis Fitzgerald chat happens, because you look at this, he was a businessman and he was just going to do whatever was best for his business. So, in a sense, you know, I think that they may have been close to thinking about Super League. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know what the internal talk was, but you got to think that, you know, if Super League had pushed hard enough, then we may have gone across. And, you know, I didn't watch one single second of Super League in that 97 season. Because I was an ARL guy, because my team was in the ARL, so I'm not going to watch that garbage. I'm not going to watch this other league, this Rebel League. But you know, like it would have changed. It would have changed a lot of stuff. You know, if we had decided to go across and become, you know, that extra franchise for Super League, yeah, it could have been. And I think that may be what he meant. You know, that if, you know, if that happens, then, you know, does some other dominoes kind of fall? Does it kind of tilt the balance? But especially because, you know, it would have been very awkward for, you know, those glorious four that they'd signed Super League contracts, signed ARL contracts, and then the team they were playing for went to the Super League. That would have been interesting. But, yeah, I just don't know. I'm just not sure whether they were even close, because it's very hard to find that information. I'm just not sure whether that's the case. And, you know, for Super League, I don't know if that would have been a good idea anyway, because, I mean, they already had Canterbury, they already had Penrith. If you had Parramatta, all of a sudden you've got, you know, you've got Cronulla as well. You know, there's so many Sydney-based teams, and that was part of the issue for Super League. They wanted to diversify. They didn't want all those. They didn't want, like, 12 Sydney teams. They wanted, you know, minimise them as much as they could. They wanted to go into new markets. So, yeah, I don't know. And I'm not sure whether they held out to last because maybe there was a sweetening deal or something that was on the table, because that's also a very Dennis Fitzgerald way of doing it. Plus, I think at one point he was talking about converting us across to a rugby union team. So, yeah. You know, like we could have done anything at that point. I just don't know how they would have dealt with that.
Well, this is one of my talking points for you, is that, you know, our last episode was our Bears case study with Nick Campton, where, I mean, I have a strong feeling that the Bears absolutely should have signed with Super League. I feel with Parramatta, they made the right decision in staying, because I think when we're talking about the reunification of the game, that need to get down the number of Sydney teams, and the fact that Super League or News Limited would have had control of Penrith, Parramatta and Canterbury, you kind of feel that they, even though every Sydney team that went to Super League stayed a standalone entity, I kind of feel that there might have been some pressure for a merger between at least two of those Super League Sydney teams if Parramatta had gone.
Yeah, I think the ARL was the best choice, and it probably was because of that. You know, if you think about it, if say Canterbury or Penrith had not gone across, then probably Super League may have been a better choice for them. But like you said, if you have two other teams very close to them in that competition, you know, I think you can pretty much look. Like I said, I'm not going to bring it back to my podcast, but you know, I've done those 10 episodes so far. I talked about mergers, and when you look at it, you know, there's teams like Balmain, there's teams, you know, sort of in that Canterbury region, you know, there's quite a lot of like cluster in there. And if you've got Parramatta and Canterbury, who are neighbouring, you know, junior districts, and you've got Penrith, who's the other neighbouring junior district, there's definitely a case that when we get a reunification, that you're going to end up with some kind of, you know, merger that happens out there. And, you know, look, I wasn't totally against mergers anyway. I don't like them, but if my team would have survived as a merger, then I would have had to support the merger. Like, that's just what I would have had to have done. But yeah, look, I think definitely Parramatta staying with ARL was the best choice. And I agree with you about North Sydney. I think North Sydney either needed to go with Super League or get a whole bunch of umbrellas so they didn't have the weather issues to build their new stadium. But, you know, like, that's pretty much their only option. If they made it to the Central Coast, they would have been safe. And if they went with Super League, they probably wouldn't safe. The one thing that happened to them made them unsafe. So,
yeah.
You know, and I think Parramatta picked the safest choice. You know, the other thing too is, you know, like, that Rebel competition might have flourished and might have gone off a user or might have folded straight away. And, you know, it's one of those things was, you know, you make a business decision at the time. And I think, you know, if the ARL had folded and Parramatta had gone with ARL, then I think you'd have a Parramatta rugby union team playing out of a Parramatta stadium. You know, like, I think he had a backup plan. It's not like he didn't have another way of going. And absolute worst case, you know, there would have been he would just run a leagues club, as you said. Like, who cares about the football club? Just want to make money. So,
it's on your show, you've mentioned that Fitzgerald was offering himself as a merger partner to anyone who would listen. So it's kind of, you know, a minor miracle that they did stand alone. And, you know, there were certainly talks with a few different clubs. I don't want to spoil your podcast. So I don't know how deep you want to go into it, but
I'm happy for merger talks, Michael. Like, this is my bread and butter. These, like I've said to you before, that when we had that chat that time, you know, I totally nerded out at that point. This is when I probably got more involved with rugby again, around 98 99, and I would, you know, look, I didn't have a computer at the time. I'd get out the sheets of paper, I'd draw up a jersey, I'd draw up a new name, I'd make team lists. You know, that's why I'm doing that podcast, you know. And all the mergers that I've talked about on that show are pretty much all the ones that I've, maybe not all of them, because there's some really wacky ones coming up. So, but you know, I definitely thought about, and you know, like Parramatta with their mergers, like there was a genuine feel amongst Parramatta fans that he just wanted that merger. He wanted to get rid of the Eels name. He didn't like it. It's you know, not a strong brand for their lease club, and they thought, well, you know, who can we merge with? Who can we become a powerful, you know, dual leagues club with? And, you know, like they really did. They went out there and there were, you know, there was talks with North, there was talks with Balmain, there was talks with Penrith. I'm sure we would have had talks with Canterbury. I'm sure we would have had talks with Wests. I know, like I said, I think we had talks being a rugby union franchise. You know, I think if we could have merged with anyone, we probably would have done it. But the funniest one is the one that was really going to happen, and we talked about in the media, was the Parramatta Tigers. And yep. The Parramatta Tigers is a funny case because from what I can figure out, Dennis Fitzgerald was, you know, maybe not literally on the phone, but was on the phone ready with the contract for the Balmain Leagues Club and said, look, you know, just let me know and we're right to go. And then at the last minute, Balmain went, we're going to be a junior partner here. What can we do? And West's become available. So I think, you know, probably, I mean, obviously you're going to get well into it when we get closer to the time, but from my recollection, from what I can figure out, is that Parramatta was within days of becoming Parramatta Tigers, and then all of a sudden this Wests merger happens. And it was, I think it was a shock to Parramatta. I don't think we realised it was going to happen. You know, like, I think the administration thought they were still talking to Balmain, and then all of a sudden it got announced. So, you know, that was a little bit, probably a bit filthy on that. But, you know, that's how we survived that way. And then obviously once you had that merger, once you had, you know, you already had your St. George Illawarra merger, and then that last sort of one that falls where North and Manly make that awful merger they had, I think that was enough. You know, that got us down to the magic number pretty much. You know, we had one extra, and at that point Parramatta was so far up the criteria that we really didn't need to merge anymore. So, you know, that's probably where we were at.
And I think the contrasting fortunes of the three mergers we got shows you how necessary it is to have a junior and a senior partner. Like, I think the two great what-ifs for me is the Western Bulldogs and the Parramatta Tigers. I think both of those would have worked so well. We would have got the number of Sydney teams down. We would have got the areas right. We can talk about Cronulla another time. But to me, it would have been so natural for both of those mergers to go ahead. And yeah, I really regret we didn't get them.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, in all seriousness, and we're making a fun little podcast when I do mine, but when I do talk to people, the West Bulldogs one comes up pretty much every time. So, you know, I do ask guys, no matter which team you are, what's the other mergers you think that makes sense? And yeah, Western Bulldogs definitely comes up a lot. I mean, Western Panthers comes up as well, but I don't think that's as good a fit. And, you know, Parramatta with either Norths or the Tigers comes up a lot. So, you know, they make sense. They do make, like, logical sense. They make territorial sense. You know, there's definitely a junior and a senior partner there. But, you know, if you're Balmain and in a leagues club, sitting there in your meeting, and then you're going, well, we're going to basically get absolved by Parramatta. We're just going to be able to keep the Tiger mascot. That's pretty much all we get. Or our other option is we go and take over the Western Suburbs. You know, I think it's pretty simple what they're going to do. And the fact that West was still available was interesting because it seems like Canterbury just thought, well, I mean, they were number one Sydney team in the criteria, so they didn't need to merge. And they obviously thought, well, it's no point for us. So obviously the sweetening pool was not enough to make Canterbury make that movement. So you feel like if they had done that, or if there was maybe the criteria was a different way and Canterbury was a little bit more vulnerable, then, you know, I think the dominoes fall the other way. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm talking to you as a Parramatta Tigers fan, and, you know, we've got the West Bulldogs and, you know, you've got Penrith out there by themselves, which, you know, probably makes the most logical sense for Western Sydney.
Yeah, agreed totally. But I think we're preempting, a chapter or many chapters that are going to come in our series down the track. Just to finish up, I just want to briefly touch on the NRL era for Parramatta, which has been a very bumpy ride for you guys. Who would have thought that Dennis Fitzgerald was the key to Parramatta's stability?
Well, look, you'd argue that we're stable again now.
Yeah,
it has taken a long time. But that's the thing too is, you know, I'm not gonna call him a cancer. But when you have someone that's so entrenched in an organization and you try and dethrone them, and I mean, like you said, the rebel tickets came thick and fast. None of them really sort of offered anything to us that we hadn't kind of, you know, that we thought was actually better than what we had, until finally we did get one and then it turned out to be a disaster. Then we had another rebel, so we had a rebel ticket on a rebel ticket. And just, yeah, look, I think with all those rebel tickets, what you've got to sort of see is that there's that delineation. So, you know, I sort of put that 70s and 80s team together as one kind of team, but in the reality of that club, or, you know, the Parramatta club, the team in the 70s and the team in the 80s are two completely different entities. You know, you've got a couple of players that go through both eras, but, you know, the guys in the 70s, it feels like, you know, they're a bit jealous of the fact that they didn't get the first premiership, and then it came in the 80s, and the 80s guys get all the glory. And I'm not sure if that's maybe the tension that's there, because when you look at some of those rebel tickets, it's, you know, guys trying to get rid of Dennis Fitzgerald were mainly the guys who were from the 80s era. So you're talking about, you know, some of these superstar guys, and they were trying to, you know, the guys that had the glory were trying to arrest the power back and say, look, you know, we want to go back to the glory days of the 80s, and that's just going to piss Dennis Fitzgerald off more. You know, he's one of the 70s players. So, you know, it feels like that was part of what the issue was. But then also it seemed like they just wanted to get rid of him just for the fact that they didn't like him. You know, there was this feeling about, oh, we don't like this guy. But he was a stabilizing influence. But when you create that power vacuum, that's when there's no stabilization. So it did take a long time. And, you know, obviously, I don't want to go through all the administrations, because, you know, that's not probably what it is. But, you know, if you go through the era of the actual on-field, like you said, you know, we almost got inherited a team in the 90s, and then all of a sudden the juniors started to come through again. So you've got, you know, Nathan Kalis and Nathan Hindmarsh coming through in the late 90s, you know, and they're learning from guys like Dimmick and Pay, and, you know, they're learning from, you know, Jason Smith, and all of a sudden, you know, we're picking up a halfback, we're getting Jason Taylor from somewhere else, you know, we're actually going outside and trying to pick up players. So it felt like the era you know, we got called the Baby Eels in 2001, and it felt like we were going to be this dominant force for years and years, and then once again just sort of fell apart again. So, you know, and then they rebuild in 2005, and then it falls apart again, and then, I mean, 2009's an aberration. That wasn't really that good team. It wasn't that good a team, but obviously, you know, making a grand final is pretty impressive, and then out in the wilderness again for another, you know, 6 or 7 years, and then we get to our current, you know, team, which, you know, I rate them as a pretty good team, but, you know, obviously if I start rating them, then we're going to get people going on about how terrible they are. So, you know, I just won't rate them at the moment. I'll wait till, like I've said to people, I'm not going to believe that we've won a premiership until we're playing in the World Cup Challenge. So, you know.
Well, I sincerely hope you get to see that. I sincerely hope you do land your next Peter Sterling sometime this century.
We went through it really quickly, but yeah, that next Peter Sterling thing. I mean, come on, guys. Peter Sterling hasn't been around for a long time. I think we can find someone else.
But on that note, we'll finish up. This was a fantastic chat, Dave. Thanks so much for joining me. So once again, anyone who's not on top of it, jump on the Hyper Space Thetic Space RL podcast. I have to put that in there because I've you know, plugged it in the past and people have gone like, I can't find that podcast you were talking about.
Oh, really? So it has to have the spaces. Maybe I shouldn't have done it that way. All right. That's cool. I'll learn for the next podcast I start.
Yeah. Too late now, but you're doing some great stuff there. So keep it up. Really looking forward to the rest of the Irrational Mergers series. So Dave, thanks so much for joining me today.
That's all right, mate. Look, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for so long, like ever since I begged and begged you to please let me come on your podcast. I'll beg and beg to let me come back. You know, I suppose the listeners will speak with, you know, they'll talk with, what's the term? They will...
Vote with their feet.
Vote with their feet. There we go. So that's probably a negative. I can't even say it right. But look, I'd really, really enjoyed this. It's one of the, you know, highlights of my NRL podcasting career. And look, you're very welcome to come onto my podcast and, you know, slum it down in you know, the depths of Hypothetic RL if you want.
I'd love it.
I won't make you do a St. George grand final loss. You can pick something else. but look, you know, because I know personally, I always thought I'd make you feel better if you can reverse the result. But yeah, it makes you feel worse, actually. So who would have thought?
Oh, no, that sounds great. I look forward to that. And I'll speak to you soon, Dave. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll speak to you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.